Say what you like about Doha 2019, it certainly got people talking. You can't not have an opinion on 41% of the women's marathon field unable to finish the race. Everyone has something to say about the tumbleweed meandering through the stands each and every session not featuring Mutaz Barsham. There wasn't a dry eye in the house when Dina became world champion or when Kat so resplendently laid her demons to rest. And of course, you can't fail to scrutinise the Alberto Salazar-shaped elephant in the room throughout the championships, unless, of course, you're a BBC commentator. For better or for worse, Doha 2019 is over, and it is our job today to pick through it. I'm Claire.
I'm Jodie. I'm Bayo with a Kit Kat in my mouth.
And welcome to the Backstreet Boys and Girl World Championship Review.
Hi, I'm Dina Rasher-Smith, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
There's so much to talk about. I've got kind of a loose structure in my head, but I thought let's start bigger picture and work our way in. As a champs, how was Doha?
Can I just say, before anyone else, we heard beforehand, stadium's going to be empty, weather's going to be terrible, all these awful things about it. I don't give a bit of that. I loved it. I absolutely, absolutely loved it. There was so much great athletics on, yeah. And I'm able to put all that besides to one side. I wasn't there. The crowds don't matter to me. The weather doesn't matter to me. It didn't have that much of an effect. And so overall, as an athletics championships, it's one of my favourites for a really long time. I absolutely loved it.
I agree with that, but I'm also conflicted.
Oh, I've got some bad... Don't worry. I've got some bad things to say.
But no, even the good things, for me... there's a negative tinge to them as well. So
some of them.
Yeah, so for me, I agree with you. It was, I mean, the performances were spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
And all the stuff that we were led to believe beforehand was going to ruin the championships, for me, it didn't either. And I think there's actually some things come out of it that are very positive. But I'm still a little bit conflicted about the overall thing.
I have to say, we made a really good decision not going.
100%.
Because all the things I didn't... all the reason I didn't want to go would have been much of the reasons that...
What a good point, yeah. Yes.
So if I'd been there, I think I would have had a wholly different experience. But sat in my living room drinking gin at 3 p.m. Gin. I've only really just discovered gin. Thank you,
so
World Championships.
Much gin. I was absolutely astonished at how much was going off on your
I had to put mine to one side. On the Friday, I put it aside, so I didn't drink anymore.
What, for the sake of your liver or because you knew
well,
that?
Both.
I cried about 3 or 4 times during this championships. If I'd had gin at my disposal, I'd have been a teary mess. Honestly. I think the failures of Doha are pretty unforgivable, if we want to be really critical of it. It makes me livid that Dina had to win her first global medal in front of deserted stands. I think the fact that they had to build a makeshift hospital at the finishing line of the women's marathon and that the women's marathon title was won in a time 15 seconds slower than the winner's personal best, like that's just stupid. And I think that those errors, the fact that Shaunae wasn't able to double up, stupid, yeah. Stupid oversights. But I agree that this sounds ridiculous, but if you can park those and just look at it in its purest form, that the performances that were produced, it was one for the ages.
Yeah. I'm going to push back a little bit about this crowd thing, because yes, it is disappointing that there's not a fully thousands of people cheering in the stadium, 100%, and it's not acceptable, I don't think, at this level. But I think we also have to get away from this idea that every championships has to be like a London or a Berlin, and put in a place in the world where there are thousands and thousands of interesting spectators. But by the end of the week, when the organisers had realised their mistake and they were bussing people in, maybe they should have done that at the beginning of the week. But we've got to get away from this idea that unless there's loads of screaming fans, it's not worth going to these places. I think that for all the reasons it shouldn't have been there in the first place, and I think we can all agree on them, the fact it was there, I think, is a benefit. I think it has brought people from a different part of the world to come and watch an athletic stadium. And for all the lack of crowds on some nights, the fact that we had a totally different demographic in that stadium, exactly. Thousands of African, Kenyan, Ethiopian, Ugandan fans cheering for distance races, like crazy cheering for distance races, turns everything on its head. And this idea that people are only interested in sprints and we've got to get rid of distance races absolutely. From the Diamond League. The reason we have to is because all the Diamond Leagues are held in... Well, majority are held in Europe. So it's...
For good reason.
No, I'm not... Yeah, of course. But the idea that people aren't interested is rubbish. It's a very Eurocentric view of athletics. Because even if you held it in America and had distance races, you'd have lots of crowds, because a lot of the fans in America are distance fans. Yeah. So I hope that people
But it used to be the case in Europe as well. It's a cyclical thing, isn't it?
No, so. What it is most of the distance star nowadays are African, and there's this idea that European people don't want to watch Africans running around the track. And maybe they don't, but there's other parts of the world where that's exactly what they want to see, and it's really short-sighted and a little bit, I hesitate to use the word racist, but you get my point. The idea that we're only interested in this narrow thing that is only of interest to a certain demographic.
Well, but to be fair, that's where the money is. But then in the long term, that doesn't mean where the money doesn't mean it's where the money always has to be.
Exactly. There has to be a championships in Africa. There has to be one in Kenya, in South Africa, in Nigeria. And yes, it's going to be different to the type of championships that we're used to. And yes, it's going to be slightly uncomfortable and the weather's going to be this and it might not be well organised because they've not done things on this scale before. But it has to happen. And I'm so excited about the World Juniors in Kenya next year because I'm 100% going.
Two questions, answer whichever or neither. Do you think that the athletes, the fantastic athletes that are headed to Doha, obviously in the best form of their lives and able to produce world records, national records aplenty? I think there was something like 83 national records over the champs. Would have performed even better had the stands been full, and therefore this was a waste of them being in that form. Second question, has Doha recruited a whole new demographic of athletics fans, or has it actually just for one night only got people in the stadium because they were busting?
Firstly, the World Championship is on the line. I don't think people were underperforming because the crowd wasn't there. And also, where were these extra performances? I don't want the performances to be any better than they were.
Yeah,
exactly. A few of them are dodgy enough already. I don't think we needed extra performances. Totally understand what you're saying about it being a one night only, but that's surely dependent on whether we go back again and give the people who had such a good time this time the opportunity to do that again. It's all very well saying one night only, but if it's in Australia and then North America and then Europe continuously, all those people who had such a great time, how are you going to continue that tradition?
So
and
has Doha grown the sport in that region?
Possibly.
Well, also, you've got to remember that Qatar won a gold medal, Bahrain won a gold and a bronze. Mm. That's a tiny, tiny, tiny place in the world. Mm. That if you actually measure it per square mile or something, that's probably...
Qatar won a bronze medal as well, didn't they, in the four hurdles?
Of course it did, that's right. So, yeah, between them, they got two golds and two bronze. So just think, in that small area, there's huge athletic stars in that area now. They've got money, they're investing money in
athletes, not all of it probably how we'd like it to be invested, but the whole area, that whole sports arena, Liz McColgan's over there coaching, it is a hub. And it's not in Europe and it's not something that we're familiar with, but even if it inspires a few kids, because I mean, we talk about athletics, that we want to inspire people to be involved and in athletics, but also being involved in sport itself. So, yes, it will have had. Maybe it was not going to turn out thousands of crowds coming to athletics meetings in Doha, but it's not just about that. It's also incumbent on the IAAF, which we talked about this last time with Ratsy, doing some promotion, continuing the promotion in that area, supporting these athletes, promoting these athletes, getting people involved.
Because also,
you can't just go somewhere, do something and leave again and then go, oh, it didn't work.
Also, you've got to remember, that's the closest it's ever been for Kenyan, Ugandan, Ethiopian athletes. So imagine if you have... in the next, say, 20 years, a major championship in South Africa. Do you know what I mean? That's like the difference that this could have made to the people, the interest in people wanting to go to that. You know, people who've thought, oh, this is nearby, this is close to home.
But it's also made me want to go. Yeah. Because those crowds were phenomenal. Yeah.
Didn't it look so fun? So much fun.
Do you know what it didn't look like? It didn't look like an athletics meeting.
No.
Because let's be fair, athletics, we can sell out those crowds in Britain, but the crowds themselves aren't the most
riotous.
Fun, are they? They're the most exciting. So it's all about to sell it out. But when you saw those people having so much fun, and that's something that athletics fans on the whole, I'm not talking about us obsessive fans who will go everywhere and all us people who are us and our friends who will go and get drunk and have lots of fun at athletics meetings. The majority are far more likely to bring a packed lunch and sit there ticking off their...
But also there's a lot of complaints, isn't there, about everyone left before the sprints. Well, that happens all the time in European meetings where people leave before the distance races.
I was just going to say,
happens all the time.
This is a fault. someone should have thought of that beforehand. Yeah. If we'd had a distance race last every single night, you would have had crowds there till the end.
Marrying the two as well, coming to your side of things and being positive about it, there is no way in hell that Barsham would have produced the performance that he had done had that not been in front of a home crowd. And actually, I think that was the single event that I had the most fun watching, was that men's high jump competition, because of how electric the atmosphere was. That actually came through the screen.
Watching that, and I agree with you, it should have been, but for me it wasn't, and I'll tell you why. Because I entered one of those prediction competitions that at Stat I did really badly, obviously, but when you've done predictions, your half of your brain is on wanting the person that you've predicted to win and not the person that you actually, your heart tells you you want to win. So I feel a bit conflicted, and I think I'm not going to do prediction contests anymore, because I think it takes some fun for me out of actually watching the athletics, because I'm conflicted the whole time. I can't get fully on board with somebody because I'm thinking, oh, but I'll get an extra point. Who cares?
But I put about 10 bets on.
Did you win anything?
I didn't win a single penny.
No.
No, but I didn't win a single penny, because I only do bets if it's like 10 to 1 or more. I don't see the point in doing a bet where you're going to win like your money back or something. So I only did them on really sort of quite out
far
there.
Out.
Like, you know, I had money on Callum Hawkins. Oh. I had money on both Lewandowski and McLuffy in the 1500, who got silver and bronze. So there was lots of ones like that. And obviously I didn't want McLuffy to win, but on the back of my head, I was kind of like...
This is Alison Felix, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
We talk stands, marathons, we talk about scheduling issues, but there's so much positive to talk about. So let's, as Jodie unwraps his third...
Mine be fourth.
Fourth Kit Kat. Let's turn to the events and the performances, which
can we come back
out
to some of the negatives at the end, though, Claire?
Oh,
God, yes. She wasn't parking the negatives.
Don't you worry.
Have you heard this podcast before?
We're going to come full circle. It's going to be what I believe they call in the industry a shit sandwich. Yeah. So we're going to start with the things we didn't like. We're going to come through to things that we liked. And then maybe at the end, we'll come back for a couple of rants.
Can I just quickly say, could we maybe like do what we think are the best things and the worst things, and then come back at the end with like our personal favourites, because I think there's a big difference between what's the best and what my personal favourites are. Does that make sense? Because some of my personal favourites, if I told you that was the best of the championships, people would be like, what the actual fuck are you talking about?
Okay, Sophie McKenna. So, we're all going to have such a big chat about that in a bit. I can just tell. Okay, the good, the glorious, the great, the things that we really celebrated over the last 10 days. What really impressed us from Doha?
There were some really random winners. Like, just people I've never heard of coming out of the blue and winning things, which I love. I mean, you absolutely love it.
I love random winners, as long as it's a nice balance of random winners and like old people, not old, older people getting their just, etc.
Yeah.
When you have a whole championship of random winners, like, was it 2001 or
2005 was a random one as well. But like, to Jay Gale in the long jump, I mean, we've seen him in things, and we've seen he jumped about 8.20, but to come and jump 8.69, like, we didn't even mention him in our preview.
No, that one we had down as such a head-to-head, but we did say
neither of them might win, but he wasn't the one I was thinking of. So that was awesome. Joe Kovacs coming back from God knows where, to like that shocked the competition.
Extraordinary. Three men over 22.90.
But you go 22.90 and come third.
And it also, he was in first most of the competition at 2019.
And must one centimetre covers like the three medalists. Yeah. What the actual... And I would have been more excited about if we'd seen any of it.
Just going
to... We will come back to the coverage. There was a tweet that went out today with a list of performances that got silver medals at these championships. And you mentioned people getting a bronze with 22.90 in the men's shot, but think about what got you a silver in the women's 1500 or in the women's 400 metres. And I know those are both eyebrow-raising gold medal winning performances, but think about the medalists.
I feel we'll be coming back to them,
100%. Think about the medalists in the pole vault competitions. Think about like what it took to win gongs in so many events. These were really stellar championships.
But like Nicholas Cole winning the decathlon. I mean, we know he's good and we know he's young and was on the way, but that, like, what? Where did that come from? Nia Valley. Yeah, she's probably a favourite for a medal, but to win convincingly, like it was really exciting, because exciting things happened and like you never knew what was going to happen next. So I think there were some of my highlights of exciting things happened from the championships.
Oh, winners out of the blue as well. Just a little shout out to Mukhtar Edris, who ranked 17th in Ethiopia this year.
I mean, he was reigning champion.
Even so, we've seen him twice this year. He came 11th at Oslo and 18th in Lausanne. And then won the world title.
But that's one of the reasons it was good for some people that it was so late.
Yeah.
Because people had time to get back to fitness or whatever issues they had.
I have to say, I agree obviously with all of Jodie's choices, and I think the fact that we did have slightly random or exciting competition like that always makes a championship for me. But should we just get out the way? The Golden Girls.
Yes, let's.
So obviously I went in saying how basically the Women's 200 was my most anticipated event, the one I was most excited for. Turned out to be a damn squib, let's be fair. You know, I think I counted basically a whole finals worth of people dropped out beforehand. So like the six of the eight people you'd expect to be in the final, six of them were not there for one reason or another.
Yes.
That meant that Dina winning was slightly anticlimactic. Yeah, there's no doubt about that, you know. But that doesn't mean it's not ludicrously exciting that we have a world champion in the women's 200 metres, along with a silver medal in the 100 metres, along with British records in both of those, along with another silver medal in the relay. This is inconceivable. Yeah. And I mean, seriously, I'm sorry, listeners, we've said this so many times. It's inconceivable that this would have happened 5-6 years ago.
We are so unfazed these days when Dina runs national records. That's what struck me, was that 200 metres. The time is bonkers. And we're just like, yeah, classic also, Dina,
like,
run another national
saying,
record.
Like, there wasn't there, it's a cheap medal, etc. It would have won 13 of the 17 world championships. So it's not, there's no way it's a weak performance. Mm. And I don't think anyone who dropped out
could have
beaten
that.
No. Shaunae, maybe, and that's a whole other discussion. But even Shaunae's not been great after rounds in lots of championships. So there's no... Last time she was one of the favourites, she came third, didn't she? Yeah. So there's nothing to say Dina wouldn't have won anyway.
What impressed me as well with Dina was how beautifully she navigated her heats and her semis in each of her events. She looked very composed, executed every time, complete game face on until she had a medal around her neck. And her with Juliasha Smith in the mix zone. And we'll talk about the mothers of the championships later. But I just think Dina looked like a champion, Alex, and she's left with three medals, and that's what she deserves.
And I know it's something we've said a million times before, but you could not create someone who is more talented, more articulate, like just everything about her. She ticks every single box, and British athletics are so lucky to have her, not just because of the performances, but what an ambassador for the sport to put out there, to put in interviews, she looks spectacular. Everything about her is absolutely 100% perfect.
Naming no names, but we've had a few sort of problematic faves over the years, haven't we? And she's not going to be problematic in any way, shape or form.
And if there were to be anyone to spoil the Dina party for whom we could actually be happy, it is Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. That, you know, the hair, the start, the middle of the race, the end of the race, the post-race interview, having her son with her at the track. She, if anyone had to beat Dina, right, she's the only person
who can wholeheartedly
get
100%. She's another one. It's just an absolute credit to the sport.
10.71. After 13 months after giving birth, my word. Actually, now is the time to just take a moment for the mothers of the championships. Mm. Nia Ali with two children, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, Alison Felix running 49.6 after giving birth, the Chinese race walker who's also become a recent mother, and then the mothers of the athletes themselves, Juliasha Smith, Noah Lars's mum, she's just a hero.
I didn't realise, because I popped out of the room and came back, and Nia Ali was walking around with two kids, and I thought to myself, they can't both be hers. Were they both her children?
Yeah, she's got two.
So one's with, what's he called? With Will Grey. Grass.
Yes.
Oh, what?
Yeah, and the other one is with Trevon, no, another sprinter. But yeah, they're both. But
I don't remember her being out for big periods.
Well, she won the world indoors in between having a kid, I think.
Mm.
And they're not very old. One's like three and one's a baby.
But that's what I meant. That's why I don't remember her being away. Anyway, well done.
Just able to shrug off childbirth
but
pregnancy.
It's unusual. It's relatively unusual for people to have any babies.
That's what I meant.
While
competing,
at least towards the end of their career. She's had two. And I don't know how old she is, but she's
and
not that old.
And a hurdler as well.
Yes.
Biologically. That is absolutely amazing. So obviously we're all in agreement, Dina was a complete superstar of the championships. Kat Johnson Thompson, we all picked Naffy.
Jodie said we might cry, didn't we, if she won. To be fair, we all picked Naffy, which was the correct
reason.
To do,
yeah.
You know?
Yes.
If we hadn't picked Naffy, it would have been totally like hometown bias, wouldn't it? You know? So Naffy had given us no reason not to choose her. We didn't know that Kat was going to come out and run 13.06 or whatever it was in her first race.
13.08. I mean, that for me, that is that's probably my number one moment of the championships, because suddenly you're like, oh,
it's on.
Yeah. And once again, with the same we were saying about Shaunae not being in the 200, Nafi wasn't 100% in, and it's obvious she wasn't. She couldn't throw the javelin like she normally could. She could have added 10 metres. Wouldn't have mattered. Kat still would have won. Kat won by over 300 points. It's the most ever since JJK in 87. So, and she scored the number 6 of all time. It's the best. It's better than any time Nafi's, any score Nafi's ever done in a championship. She's only got one better score in Gotsis.
Mm-hmm, with the freaky javelin.
Like, mm-hmm. JJK only did it 3 times. What's she called? From
Carolina
Clift only performed better than that twice. So it's like such an incredible score with no massive weaknesses. Yes, the shot and the javelin are not as good as others, but they're equal to Nafi's 200 and 800. Mm-hmm. So it's just to have got it all together like that, to conquered all those demons, to turn into the person who does set 4 personal bests over a heptathlon instead of the person who we're willing and scared what's going to happen. It's a totally different, not physically, but mental attitude. Nafi must be terrified now.
And to smile throughout.
Yes, totally. That's the difference. You could tell from the very first event, you know, when she finished the hurdles, she was like, yeah! And I've never, ever, ever seen her that emotional, that kind of like excited about something on a track, however well she's done in the past.
When it got to the javelin, and she was swearing, she was having a laugh with people and going, oh,
she was picking up javelin, playing with them, throwing them around.
Like, what?
Who is this woman?
And you know what? They spoke, I think it was Raddy did an interview with Brianne Thiessen-Eaton when she was sat in the stands with Ashton, and she was saying, it's so nice to see Kat laughing and smiling, because I've always noticed that Kat performs better if she's just been having a joke or if she's just been having a moment with one of the other heptathletes. And I think it's something that we've always known, is that behind the scenes, Cass is so laid back. She's so much fun, but you never see it when she's wearing that GB kit. And I think for the first time, we saw her completely blossom on the world stage. And you're right, Tokyo is going to be one hell of a dust up if
and
Nafi's healthy.
And taking off that pressure, not there's going to be massive pressure on her before Tokyo, because there will be, because it's the Olympics and she's the gold medalist. But it's a different type of pressure than that individual pressure coming up to the shot put, which was on herself. It's not a pressure to get a medal. It's that pressure on that one event. I'm not sure she knows why she threw that far, but maybe she needs to go away and look at that.
In which one?
In the shot put.
There is a thing going round, which I haven't actually properly investigated, but I did see it, like, peripherally, that was mismarked.
No, it looked massive.
No, when you actually... There's some photos where, like... I'll show. There are some, I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying there are some doubts about that.
Listen, even if it wasn't 1383 or whatever it was much better than she's ever
thrown
before.
Yeah, it looked, but from the thing they were saying, maybe 1340, 1350 as
well. I don't care. Even that would do.
Yeah.
And that would have, we would have celebrated as much. Mm-hmm. But I just hope that she knows why that happened and can redo it. And everyone,
to be fair, it didn't look any different to the rest of her throws.
No, but like all the commentators
are actually throwing it.
All the commentators are just so adamant that she can throw so much further. Yeah. I saw someone say, I think it was
Tony, wasn't it?
Sean Pickering.
Oh, Sean Pickering
said
maybe.
She could throw 14-15 meters, and Steve Backley in the javelin was saying she can throw 48-50 meters. Because it's the technique, and now she's got that, like, what's it called off her back?
Monkey.
Oh, monkey. I was going to say horse. And then I was going to say donkey. So now she can, like, not be overthinking. Or just go and do it. Just go and naturally, and hopefully this winter, she can just pick up those little bits that she needs to change technique-wise.
Hi, I'm Dalila Muhammad, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
So we've had Dina, we've had Kat, two of the best bits of the champs. My thing I'm going to throw onto the table isn't an individual performance, not even a British performance, not one of these athletes are British, but I want to celebrate the return of the fast race.
Ooh.
Because we have spoken so much about, okay, firstly, 3 British men in the 1500 metre final. Where did that come from? But also, we've spoken so much about middle and long distance races and how they turn into such cagey affairs, and we just don't see quick times anymore because no one is willing to take it out. Hassan, Cheptegei, Chariot, Obiri. We saw some blindingly quick times over the longer distances.
Jonathan Brazier.
Yeah, people who just weren't afraid to really go for it, lay down a mark and go, you know what, I'm really quick, let's see if you are too.
But even I would even argue about that in the men's marathon, because in those, I mean, to run 2:10 in those conditions, 2:10 is normal. I mean, even slower than that for lots of championship marathons. So yeah, it is good because I think you feel like you get like a true champion out of
a true run race, Jodie.
But you know what I mean, because it doesn't just come down to like who was in the right place. And can I also say something else? I was like, couldn't believe I'd seen is British, especially male middle distance runners with amazing tactics.
Josh Kerr is such a clever racer.
But even what's he called? The other one,
Neil Gawley
in the semi-final. We complain all the time about people running on the inside. He did it to perfection. It was a masterclass.
And interestingly, I don't know if you noticed this as well. We'll come to the Ingebrigtsens, I'm sure. But Jakob got rattled. Mm. The first time I've ever seen him in both races, Jakob got rattled. I saw panic on his face. Jakob got rattled. Mm. I saw that panic on his face. He wasn't sure who he was going to be. I've never seen that before, ever. Mm. He always seemed so composed, and this time he wasn't, and you know, that's what happened.
I think we have just come to expect too much of him.
Absolutely.
Though the fact remains he's a teenager leaving the world championships with a fourth and a fifth place in very competitive, very fast races.
Can I just say he should have just done the 1500?
Oh, completely, because you saw him die on the home straight, and that was the 5000 in his legs. I was shouting at my television as well, don't you worry. But it's really nice to see people running free run races once again. And, you know, you can be as sceptical as you like about some of those performances and the origins of those times. That was great.
No, I legit thought that's what you'd said for a moment.
I wish I were that clever. I'm not quick enough to come up with anything like that. But the fact remains, I really enjoyed watching a couple of proper old school dust-ups. And as a massive Closter Helfen fan, it was really nice to see her finally in a race that she didn't have to take out herself and that she could actually be in the mix with.
What's with Helena Beery this year? I've never seen a more incoherent year of athletics with somebody.
So true.
Like she ran a 58 last second lap. So why did she have to lead the whole race? It made no sense to me. I mean, she won, so I'm not criticising it. But when you've got that much speed, which no one else can touch, why are you leading the whole way?
It's just such an odd
year.
She's
been so up and down. And why in the 10,000 could she not even get a medal? Like, it was
bizarre.
And then, like, just last, was it the...
In Brussels,
was it Brussels? She had the shocking race. You know, she was, like,
yes.
200 metres behind. And then this girl comes out and wins the Worlds all over the place.
And but why is no one sorting out her arm technique? I'm sorry, I mean, it's distressing to watch. Another person who went out super, super fast and then just didn't slow down was Dalilah Mohammed.
Oh.
And that 400 metre hurdles race had... I think there was so much hype around it. I can't even imagine what it would have been like watching it in the States. Because obviously all the forums were going into meltdown about the Wonder Kid, Go Sid Go. But it really lived up to the billing. One of the best races of the champs, right?
I mean, you could argue the best race of the champs.
Probably the best race of the champs.
I love Dalilah Mohammed.
Me too. Absolutely love
because
her.
She delivers.
Yeah.
Like, she's not lots of hype around her. She didn't bring it every time to the Diamond League. But when did she bring it? With two world records at the national championships and at the world championships.
The only two
that matter.
Yeah.
And I feel a little bit sorry for Sydney McLaughlin. Not that she needs my sympathy.
I think she's doing all right.
But to have that much hype around you, and it's not that it's not warranted, because obviously she's sensational, but I just think it's a little bit unfair, and it's also unfair on Dalilah Mohammed,
absolutely,
who is actually
100%
the better athlete at the moment, maybe not in the future. And Sydney McLaughlin, unfortunately for her, there's a little bit of a Lolo Jones around her for me.
I agree.
Which isn't her fault, because she doesn't behave the way Lolo Jones did. But this all this hype, like someone wins and we're like, oh, Sydney McLaughlin. No, let's not talk about Sydney McLaughlin right now. Let's talk about Dalilah Mohammed.
Might be worth mentioning that apparently, and people again are saying that this has been misrecorded, but Sydney dropped to 48.6 relay leg last
night. I saw
that,
but I think it's been changed to 49. Because I saw that originally, it said 48.6, and then if you look on the results now, it's 49.8.
You say 49. Guess which athlete in this championships won a gold medal with their 49th race of the season? 49 races. He is... I'll give you some clues. It's a he. an NCAA record holder.
Oh, so in the hurdles?
Yes.
Oh, Grant Holloway.
Rod Holloway. That was his 49th race.
That's ridiculous.
Of the year. Also, I didn't realise what a ridiculous athlete he is. To quote our friend Radzi, he is, what did he say? Athletic ambrosia. Genetic ambrosia, to quote Radzi. He's an 8.17 long jumper, a 6.50, 60 metre runner, and at the NCAAs this year ran a 43.75 relay split. Mm. kid can do it all.
Wow. The thing is, when you're that talented, you can do so many different things. I mean, will he just stick to that? Imagine him doing 400 hurdles.
Yeah.
God, oh, yeah, because there aren't enough good for that. What did you think about the Ortega drama in the hurdles?
Well, obviously, when we came to bad things, that was going to be my number.
Well, can we talk about that and other things surrounding that now, then, as it's come up?
Yeah, let's
there
do
were
it.
So many awful
judging decisions
at these championships. Like, it was amateur hour.
Yeah.
So not only, and not in the moment, because judges can make mistakes in the moment, but they were backed up by the appeals as well. Yes. So that was ludicrous. So what happened was Omar McLeod went into Ortega's lane, tripped him up. I think it was on the eighth hurdle. So he was in second or third place at the time, crosses over the line in fifth. So what do they do? What you should do is rerun the race. Now, I know that's not a popular thing to do, but it has got precedent. It happened at the 78 European women's indoors in the 93 world indoors. So it has happened before. But what they... 88 Europe,
just
world
juniors.
Say,
juniors, of course, Jenny. How can you fact that? Go, Jackie.
So I'm not saying that that's a good solution. It's not a good solution. But what's a worse solution is just giving Orlando Ortega a bronze medal. He came fifth. There is no reason for giving him a bronze medal.
He could have hit that last hurdle himself. He could have fallen over. He could have injured himself. Anything could have
happened. He could have
won. He could have won. Yeah, nothing. So where are you getting bronze from, for starters, you know? And then to compound that, the poor guy actually came fourth.
They've relegated him to fifth.
They've relegated to fifth.
No.
Yeah, they've relegated
you
to
fifth. You can't relegate someone. If you bump someone up, then that's just a glitch in the matrix and you keep everyone where they are. I hadn't realised that.
Yeah.
So, it's a hurdles race. Shit happens, you know.
If you
it's
do like, the high hurdles, yeah, you've signed up happens. For that.
It's like, it's not, you can't, rules can't always make everything right. So, you can say, I'm so sorry, it was terrible what happened. Also, it's not like the time where Deron Robles, was it, pulled Liu Zhang back. That was a human, like, he actually did that purposefully, or whether it was not purposefully, but like, when Omar McLeod fell over, he didn't mean to fall over. He just happened to fall over. It's an accident.
Omar McLeod is a menace. And this season, he's been awful for knocking things over, for knocking other people over, for not finishing races. I feel like he's not in great form. And what he does, he was catching. He was catching.
And if he'd had patience.
And yeah, if he'd been trying less, like calm down, relax, I'm not saying he would have won, but he would have got a silver medal. But I think because he knows he's not in great form, I think he panics a little bit. Mm. And he's so short as well, compared to all the others. He has to make such a bigger modifications to get over hurdles that there's lots of room for error.
All of that may be true, but the answer there is you penalise Omar McLeod. You don't then...
just give out a medal.
Give out an extra medal to someone else who happens to have got in the way. It's just sport, you know. This stuff happens all the time. It's just sport.
But then we go to the 1500, and Middle Ingebrigtsen...
Philip.
Who decided to punch someone.
Literally punch someone.
And he doesn't get disqualified.
No.
Now, I don't think that punch actually caused the fall.
Well, it was a mess and they were both at fault.
But you can't punch someone and then cross over straight away in the back of them and trip them over and not get disqualified. I mean, it's
even without the crossing, you can't punch someone in 1500 metres.
The crossing, I think, you could put off as an accident, although I think it was careless, but I think it was an accident. But you can't punch someone. I don't care how soft it was or whatever. You can't do that. The women in the women's 4x4, the Jamaican women, who were blatantly stood in the wrong place. But apparently the story is they were put there by the officials.
Yeah, they were put there by the officials. So they got disqualified and then put back in. But
that's an official's mistake again. I mean, it's so simple.
Also, when Jakob got disqualified, did get put back in when he got disqualified for being slightly bumped off the track. Mm. And you're just like, come on, that's not what the rule's there for.
Prioritise the decisions you're making here.
It's like if someone is, this jostling goes on in the 1500 metres, you know. If you can see someone round a curb taking a sneaky jump inside, that's fine. But if someone gets jostled off the track for three steps, that does not warrant a disqualification.
Particularly when there are more people in the heat
than
there are in the stands of the bloody place.
But there's more in the men's hammer. Nowicki got given a bronze medal because Bence Halash from Hungary, right? In the first round, he threw 78-18, which was stood up as good enough for the bronze medal. He wasn't disqualified at the time.
Why would he have been disqualified?
Well, because afterwards, they judged it a foul throw. I think, am I getting this all the wrong way around?
Go ahead.
He threw 78-18. They said that if he'd been given the foul at the time, then it would have changed the way he threw for the next five throws. Because if you think you've got, he was in silver medal position a lot of the time, if he thought he was, I don't know, if he would have tried harder, he would have tried less hard, whatever. So they didn't take his bronze medal away because it wasn't his fault that he hadn't been told it at the time. And instead, once again, they just give Nowicki a bronze medal. So presumably at the end, Poland put in a protest, looked at his first, the other guy, the hungry guy, first round throw, said, actually, that was a no throw. So we're not going to disqualify him because if we'd given him a no throw at the time, he could have thrown different in the subsequent throws. I think that's a bit of a tenuous argument. But so, yeah, just giving out two bronze medals with different... Two bronze medals, but with different distances.
And the problem, the real problem there, of course, is that neither of them should have got a bronze medal anyway because Nick Miller should have got a silver.
Exactly. Nick Miller, I'm not a hammer judge.
No.
And I do also appreciate that the camera angles we got were not conclusive, but there is no way that was an automatic red flag.
Yeah. No, there's no way that is such an obvious red flag that you lead the competition halfway through without a fight. You know,
that was weird.
Very weird.
Because he was very subdued about the whole thing. And I understand you may not necessarily know because you're not staring at your feet, but I think he should have fought a little bit harder for that.
Or someone in, I'm going to say UKA again, whatever they're called, British Athletics, should have been straight round there saying, make sure they measure that. Make sure, you know, we're going to protest this. Please, we're going to keep protesting. Get your three.
Or get it measured and then we can at least discuss it later on. It was really disappointing. I think a lot of the judging was just a bit off.
But it's been a bit of a trend recently. I mean, going back
funny
to
the DQs.
Going back to 2016 was shocking for DQs, and there was also quite a few dodgy ones in London as well. What we've never had before is people being given medals for performances they didn't actually.
No, that's a whole new.
That's a whole new bag of like nonsense.
I think
it's
a very dangerous Pandora's box.
Really dangerous precedent.
Where does that stop? And a lot of these decisions are being made on subjective bases, and one of the things that I love about athletics is that it is so clear whether or not someone's 100%. Outperformed someone else. So if you have these grey areas, it's going to get problematic.
Talking of problematic,
I was just going to say, let's confront it head on. There were some weird performances in these champs, and I think the presence, or the timing rather, of the announcement that Alberto Salazar has been banned from the sport for 4 years was really troublesome.
What's so troublesome about this, what's really weird about this, is the actual case was concluded in like June or something, wasn't it? And they agreed that it wouldn't be released until the like 1st of October or something, knowing full well that was in the middle of the World Championship.
I mean, that's just disgusting. Whoever decided to do
what's
that?
What's going on there?
I don't know. There's so much stuff that we don't know about everything about this. But doing that in the middle of a championships is unforgivable.
I think athletics really prides itself on being one of the sports that is doing something about doping culture, which is seemingly widespread across a lot of athletic disciplines, team sports and individual sports. And so every time, they make a big expulsion like this, it shows that they're actually being active about it and not supposedly brushing things under the carpet. But it is so detrimental to the athletes competing. And I know a lot of people have raised eyebrows at Sifan Hassan's performances, but how deeply, deeply unfair, if she is completely innocent, that her performances were massively overshadowed by this, that she was left tearful in mixed zone interviews, that her performances will forever be viewed as tainted, and that everything she goes on to achieve will now be tarnished with the brush of Alberto Salazar.
To be fair, I have limited sympathy.
Yeah. When I saw the interview with Jeanette when she cried, I was like, oh, because we've all liked Safan Hassan,
right?
I didn't.
But you interrupted.
But just for that minute, I was like, oh. But no,
because the tears were really self-serving. Yeah, she wasn't saying, she basically was saying it's really unfair that all these people are accusing me of potentially taking drugs. What she didn't say is it's really unfair that my coach has got banned for 4 years and he's the one I blame. She was blaming the fans or the media for questioning her performance, not blaming her coach for getting banned. And so she knew when she started working with him that he was under investigation. You can't go under those circumstances knowing your judge could be dodgy or criminal and then step back afterwards and say, like, it's not my fault. You have to take responsibility.
Did you see that awful interview with Craig Engels after?
Oh, my God, so embarrassing.
It was so embarrassing. And he said he had a go at Jenny Simpson because she's given us a bad name. It's like, no, love.
But Cathal, our friend Cathal, who's an Irish journalist, he said, but surely Alberto Salazar's the one giving the bad name.
And he's like, all this, oh, I'm going to wait and hear what the...
We're going to wait and hear what the verdict is, he kept saying. Well, that was last week, mate.
Yeah, we know what the verdict was.
It was a four-year ban.
These athletes have to take responsibility, and if they don't want people to talk about them, then don't go with that coach. It's the same as I have no sympathy for Justin Gatlin or all those athletes who were with Trevor Graham back in
the day. Absolutely, exactly.
Who always said, oh, I didn't know. Of course you... Like, it's just a lie to say you didn't know. Because
I knew.
Yeah.
You know, I knew thousands of miles away. I knew. So, like, don't tell me you work there every day and you don't.
And Chris Lambert was saying that he, back in the day, he was looking for a coach in America, and there was talk about him going to Trevor Graham, and he could discuss with his manager, and they're like, you're not going with him. We're not going there, because if one person gets found for anything, you get tainted. Mm. So you've got to do your homework. And if you're so desperate, or if desperate's the wrong word, but if you don't care about that, you care more about you getting good results than the value of athletics as a whole or your reputation, then it's your own fault. And also, if Safwan Hassan, if she doesn't want people to not talk about drugs in the same sentence, so she needs to stop with these ridiculous performances. You cannot be the world mile record holder and the world 10,000 meter champion in the same year. You can't come and run 3:51 by yourself at a championships, having run the 10,000 and won that 3 days before.
Closing with a 4:17 mile.
It's ridiculous. Mm. And I do feel sorry for her, because like you said, she's never tested anything for anything. She has
And
been
she could very well not be on anything, maybe. And
but this she
is, hold on. She may very well be, and this is undoubtedly true, Alberto Salazar is a really, really good coach, you know. So there'll be plenty of people who have gone to him, have never done anything wrong in their lives, but are suddenly doing things they've never done before, and he's getting the best out of people. That does not mean that everyone there is on drugs. She could very well not be. And
at least they don't know they're on stuff, because I'm not putting it past him to all kinds of stuff.
But I'm not in any way saying that she is on drugs. What I'm saying is she's done enough this week, especially with the controversy of her coach, to warrant questions. And you can't sit there crying on TV saying it's not fair when the questions themselves have to be asked.
And the only people who've ever done those kind of performances are the Chinese athletes in the 90s. And it's perfectly acceptable for all of us to go, ah, ha, ha, they're all on drugs. And people say it all the time. They don't even couch it with anything. It's just a given. GDR athletes and Chinese athletes from the 90s were all on drugs. No nuance, nothing. And when you do performances that are better than them, that's what people are going to think.
What then leaves a very sour taste for me as a viewer is when you have athletes associated with Salazar running performances like that, and people aren't explicitly discussing the Salazar issues in studios and in commentary, and then when NASA drops a 48.17 400 metres, it is pretty much written on the wall that there's something suspect with that performance. I personally found having Cram and Radcliffe, Nike ambassadors, and other people in the BBC studio reluctant to discuss the Salazar case a very uncomfortable presence in all of those conversations.
It was also, it's more complicated than that, of course, because we will continue, as they did, embarrassingly, celebrating Mo. So, of course, they can't keep bringing up Salazar. Because every time they bring up Salazar, that also taints Mo, which they don't want to do because Mo's
they've cut all these VTs and they want to run.
Also, Paula's husband is Mo's coach.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's very un-BBC.
Yes, really un-BBC. And I'm actually surprised because the BBC is up to its ears in like protocols and so I'm actually surprised that either of those were allowed to really discuss it, because
and also I have lots and lots of respect for Paula Radcliffe, and I mean she came on our pod, she gave us nearly 2 hours at an interview and answered all of my questions, and has and even on Twitter has no problem engaging with everybody. If you want to ask her something, she'll come out and tell you straight. I take for what she says as on face value. I've got no reason not to, but I'm sorry to say, it was an apologist for Salazar, because it was all like, oh, he's taking it to the line and he's trying his best and it might have been accidental. It was cringing to watch, and without them giving a disclaimer that this is the background, it was quite distasteful.
On the other hand, the fact they didn't talk about it so much, I was quite glad about, because they do have a tendency on the BBC, whenever any kind of drug scandal comes up, to go on and on and on and on about it. Half hour chats in the beginning, and you're just like, can we get on with the athletics, please? So the fact that they didn't actually dwell over it too much, I didn't mind so much, because it meant we were actually watching athletics instead.
But it was good, I think, on the last night after Hassan was crying that Michael came on, and yeah. I have a lot of
Michael
issues.
Michael was great.
Yeah, I have a lot of issues with Michael Johnson.
I've had a lot of issues for probably about 10 years now with Michael Johnson, but I thought he was fantastic this championship.
And he was very authoritative on that whole subject, and I thought he spoke absolute sense.
What he said, which was absolute sense, was he said it's exactly the same with Christian Coleman. You know, the fans are up to date, I've had enough, we've had it with this kind of stuff. You've got to take responsibility for yourself. And he's right. So Christian Coleman missing whatever the proper terminology is, test, see if Hassan choosing whatever coach you wanted to go to. Don't then come complaining back when it doesn't go your way because you knew what you were getting yourself into.
Hi, it's KJT and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
They might have struggled to hold Salazar's athletes accountable for their decisions, but I did very much enjoy Gabby Logan hauling John Ridgen over hot coals. We might have given her a hard time over the time that they basically interrogated an IAAF doctor at the last World Championships. That was appalling, but I thought she was really quite mercenary with her discussion of the attendance at the championships and the climate, and I thought that that was good and it needed to.
I think it's good and I think it was really good journalism. I do feel a bit sorry for John Ridgen,
yes,
because he's only been in the
March, that, I think he started in March or something.
So it was nothing to do with him, the decision to bring
But no one's left who is...
Well, no, because it wasn't even Seb Coe wasn't president
then
either.
No, exactly, it was 9 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not fair. And I'm a little bit uncomfortable, like I said previously, with this whole thing about we can't have athletics in parts of the world that don't have big crowds. There's something doesn't sit right with me about that. So, but while I think she was right, I think there were other issues. I'm not sure it was the right issue to be so hardcore about.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Where I think the BBC got it wrong was the fact that they'd obviously spent a lot of time and a lot of money producing some VTs that they could not stop running. It was like they felt the need to... it was like they were being sponsored, they were on royalties. There was a need to show that video of all of the female British medalists over the World Champs over the years at least twice a day. And the Dina promo went out a million times. And then the straw that broke the camel's back for me, and I actually lost it and tweeted them, was the Mo Farah highlights as Mihambo was jumping 7.30 metres in the women's long jump.
And there was a Noah Lyles interview.
There was a Noah Lyles interview. Right, I actually tweeted out what the actual... Oh, my God. This was actually my nadir of the whole championships. The one event we have been looking forward to the most, I think we even said it here last week, was the men's pole vault.
Right? Yes.
Which was like... I mean, it didn't turn out to be quite as exciting as you wanted to be,
but still great.
You don't know that until it's happening. Of course, we didn't know it was happening because we kept... Steve would set Emma back to the pole vault, but hadn't given us any context, don't know what jump they're on, don't know... We'd see like, you know... one of them would be running up with a pole, but is this the second jump or the third jump? What height are we at? Completely ruined it. And in the middle of that, they showed a Noel Lyles VT.
And somebody, let me just say, somebody at the BBC actually tweeted me saying, I totally agree with Bayo's tweet. About
oh, yes.
Me.
Yeah, we won't say yes. Yeah, someone tweeted us back.
And getting Carsten in studio during the heptathlon high jump.
Yeah, what? Literally, the pivotal event. I mean, it didn't turn out to be the pivotal event, but very well could be the pivotal event in the whole high jump. And we need to listen to Carsten. Why couldn't they have recorded that and shown that later? They're very happy to do that with field events and show them later. The men's trip shot put, which was the most spectacular shot put competition and probably one of the best. Somebody, I can't think who it was, said he thinks it's the best. I think it was Trey Hardy, actually. Said he thinks it's the best event ever. It overtakes Mike Powell and Carl Lewis.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about that because obviously there was world records involved in that. But it was up there to have that close a competition. It was spectacular, and we didn't get to see the whole story. We just came back to Joe Kovacs throwing 91. Where was he? Where was he placed beforehand? Who did he overtake? What round? I don't know. You have to tell a story with field events.
I'm going to say overall, the field events were
amazing.
Fantastic.
They really were. I mean, there was a couple of clunkers. The men's javelin wasn't too exciting.
That was,
you know.
Well, but the winner was...
Oh, the winner was great, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying as a competition, it wasn't too much to write home about. The women's discus, we wouldn't know because they did what they do at the Diamond League. They did like three throws at the end. But we're doing lots of complaining here about the BBC. I think overall, they did a really, really good job.
There were lots of good things.
There was loads of good things. For example, we have the... started at 2 o'clock most days, finished sort of around about 10. There was often an hour and a half in the middle, which usually would be an hour and a half of, like, utter nonsense. But somehow they managed to pack that hour and a half where I wasn't screaming, punching the screen, or
I loved those,
punching the walls.
Those interviews just with the 90s athletes.
But they weren't just, it wasn't just like a little 5 minute thing. They were like 15-20 minutes long, weren't they?
Beautiful archive pictures. Yeah. Really nice.
And also
shot.
Phil Jones, who's like really good and really knows what he's doing, going back and actually asking them, going through their careers, you know, actually asking them questions. Well, what happened at this championship and that championship? You know, when I did my Christine interview, I like things structured, linear. You know, I like things linear. So he was a man after my own heart, taking us through and building a story. Mm. And even the Linford one, we got to the end and he asked Linford about the drug thing, which people don't do, you know. They tend to either focus on it too much, or they tend to like completely brush it under the carpet.
Can I just say, and I know he's had a drug ban, don't send me messages, I love Linford Christie.
I agree.
What a gentleman. What an absolute gent. And did you see that swimming program that him and Tessa are on?
Yeah,
it was great.
So feel good.
I mean, just what an athlete, what a championship performer, and what an absolute gentleman who's still involved now in coaching athletes.
And we've known him for like 17 years, I think, we first met him properly in Munich. And he's always been just such a lovely, lovely, just a genuinely nice person. Now, he's got a bit of a prickly personality, and I'm sure there's plenty of people who have fallen out with him over the years. I'm not talking about working with him or competing against him. I'm just talking about the way he treats
fans,
you know. You used to see him, you still do. He'll be stopped by like a whole crowd of kids, and he will sit and wait and have pictures of everybody, autographs of everybody, you know, not storming off like people who won't be mentioned, Michael Johnson, who, you know, will refuse to engage with fans in that way. So those VTs were just,
you know, brilliant.
Just beautiful.
Phil Jones, an old hat, really knows what he's doing, a proper BBC veteran. But also I think their recruitment has been great. Jeanette belongs in that chair. She was so great. Radzi, I thought, did a really great job. He and Naomi with their little Doha rap show, I loved it. And I just thought
brilliant.
It was a breath of fresh air.
Jeanette in the studio, I thought, in the afternoon, I thought she was brilliant, because she's never done that before.
No.
She's never done it before. So of course, I thought there were some mistakes, and we're going to this and we're not going to that, but it's a complicated thing to get your hand on. But just as someone who can hold that space and do the interviews and then go outside and do the vox pops as well, I thought she played a blinder. And Naomi are better. I mean, I'm not sure, I need to see what's on people's phones, but what a brilliant personality.
But that, again, was the kind of thing that usually would have really irritated me, but that was actually a fun, sort of fun thing. It was
well
a modern
executed.
Thing. It felt like it was aimed at the kids, but it wasn't patronising. You know, so you were actually getting a bit more about the athletes. It just was well done in a way that they're not usually with the BBC. So overall, I was pretty, apart from the obvious things we'll always moan about, overall I was pretty, pretty pleased with the BBC this time. And also one thing I want to say, that duo of Steve Backlin and Tony Minicello,
brilliant,
absolutely brilliant, and they make field events so much more exciting and interesting. Not the need to be for me, but I think they do such a good job of explaining it to the casual viewer and understand what you're looking out for, etc. So I think those two are just brilliant, and I hope
absolutely
they're there for years to come.
Yeah, agreed.
Hi, this is Tony Minicello and you're listening to The Backstreet Boys.
Perfect.
We swore we would keep this one short, and it's already spiralling out of control. So whistling through it, I just wanted to say, we got it spot on with Christy and Taylor. A lot of people agreed that, you know, CT would come through, and he absolutely did. He was the epitome of it's not over till it's over. We got it right with Carsten. Those of us who said Carsten, what a performance. I loved his I'm a fucking Viking t-shirt.
No, and I loved his interview afterwards when he said his heart was going
to
stop.
Yes, what was it? I'm going to dig deeper than I ever did, I said to my coach before the race. If my heart stops, then you know I was happy while it happened. Cat beating Nafi, we got completely wrong. We got the long jump completely wrong. Radzi called Adam Jamili, and I can't talk about it because I'll cry. Oh. But Radzi was right. Jamili really came good, although there's such a sense of a missed opportunity there. The last thing I wanted to talk about from our predictions is we all thought about 4 or 5 relay medals from GB and kind of upwards of 8 individual medals.
I said four and seven. You said eight medals
because I was going to choose
12. But there have been a lot of really negative headlines today, and a lot of the athleticos on Twitter have been saying, actually, you know what? The negative headlines are so misrepresentative and they're so unfair. How do you both feel, off the back of our predictions, about the British squad performance?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Let's talk about next. So I think we need to stop counting success in number of medals, because number of medals doesn't tell us anything. Dina got three medals this time. And when we come home, we've two golds, spectacular golds as well. And we've got relay medals, and we did really well. So I don't think you can take a negative from our performances. We had loads of people came forth. Who came forth? Adam came forth. Callum came forth. Holly came forth. Someone else came forth. I think we had four or five fourths. Oh, relays.
The mixed relay
and the women's relay. It was a really good championships. And looking below that, the performances by people who didn't necessarily get medals.
Well, just things like getting three men in the 1500 metres. That's amazing. That was fantastic.
I mean, we had two women in the long jump final. That's really good.
Ailish and Laura in the 5K.
Yeah, they did great.
Oh, Scottish record for Ailish. Amazing run by Laura. Agreed.
There's always going to be some disappointments at a championships.
The only event that was really a bit reluctant, I think, was the women's 800 because there was medals to be got there. But other than that, overall, I thought we had a perfectly decent championship.
Tom Bosworth,
yeah, like that was Callum Hawkins.
Oh, what
like a, that? That's from. I mean, it's difficult because we've got all these gold medals, but like.
Yeah,
that performance was out of this world. It was so exciting to watch.
So exciting.
Can I just very quickly say, we won't dwell on it, but those mixed 4x4s are not long for this world, are they?
I mean, it was just
Because not only are they rubbish, and not only are they plonked in the middle of the schedule, which ruins the rest of the schedule, but they've now put a rule in where you can bring a whole new team in. So you could not only bring a whole new team for the mixed 4x4, I think because of the mixed 4x4s, you were also allowed to bring a whole new team into the 4x4 relay.
So the women's 4x4 had four new people in the final. Totally different to the rounds.
Which is outrageous.
Only America can do that. America's the only country who can do that.
That's the sort of thing that Russia used to do in 1980. You know, they used to like pretend people were injured and bring new people in. Mm. And there's rules in place to stop that kind of thing. Now you're literally saying, oh, go ahead, you know. And America are the only people that get benefits. It's disgusting.
I really enjoyed it, but that's because I'll watch anything if it's a race. But I completely agree that logistically, no, it doesn't make sense, and it favours nations with that depth.
One nation. There is only one nation,
okay,
really.
It favours the states.
Hi, I'm Holly Bradshaw, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
You're going to hate me, but I'm going to give you each one favourite thing from the champs that we perhaps haven't discussed so far.
We're talking personal favourite here, aren't
personal
we? Rather than favourite. Like, yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Can we all just say it at the same time? One, two, three.
Sophie McKenna!
What a bona fide superstar to pull that out of the bag and put it 18 metres and 61 centimetres. Oh, my days.
We didn't watch a lot of it together, just because we live totally opposite sides of London and couldn't be bothered to go to each other's houses, but we were together. I think it was the Saturday or the Sunday when that happened. That was the biggest scream from me of the whole championships.
Down from at the championships, did you hear Sophie?
that was my favourite moment of the championships. Yeah. It sounds ridiculous, and only a proper athletics geek like myself would say that. But like, we spoke to her recently. She's been going, like, she's been a junior who's like been coming through, and we don't have female shot putters. I tell you what, the female shot is now going to be in my female sprints from now on.
Yes,
you know?
We're going to keep going on and on about it until we have a world champion.
Yeah.
Oh my god, so we've got shot queens together.
Yes,
sprint queens. Yeah,
I do want to do over the winter do a whole pod throws. About throws. And get, like, I've said this before, but talk to Steve Backley, talk to Tessa Sanderson.
Great,
let's
idea.
Get some shot, but let's get and find out what's going on
what's
with
going
British
on.
Throws. Get Sean Pickering on as well.
So we all agree that Sophie was terrific. Just before we give one each, let's hear from Radzi, who was so great on our preview pod and has sent us a little voice note from Doha about his favourite moments.
This is Sophie McKenna, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
Easily my moment of Doha 2019 is seeing Katarina Johnson-Thompson walk away as world heptathlon champion. Coming into this, I don't know how many people thought it was plausible, let alone possible. And what she did, she beat Nafi Tiam with a score which makes British sports history. What she has done is proven all the naysayers wrong. We all knew she had the talent. But to me, it's about the context. We think back to Beijing and to Rio and to London and to how many missed opportunities she's had. And I think I even said on the podcast, I wish she knew how good she actually is. And from the moment the one hurdles had finished, she crosses the finish line, the expression on her face, she looked like a different person. Something had clicked and there was belief, and it was just awesome to watch. 2 days of athletic jousting. It was truly fantastic. A humble girl from Liverpool, brought up in a single parent family, and she's now conquered the world. I'm so, so pleased for her. That's my number one, without a shadow of a doubt. My number two, and it's slightly different, it's the other end of the spectrum. So we could talk about medals, we could talk about maybe someone coming fourth place like Adam Jamili, but my, if you like, unsung hero of these champs has to be Sophie McKinna, a lady who works full-time in a prison, a lady who gets her personal best and then finds out that it's not enough to qualify for the Olympics because of the nature of the competition that it was. And so for her to come here at the World Championships, and as she said, she treated the qualification like a world final, and she threw a personal best, a national record. I think she ended up fifth in qualifiers. The final wasn't as she wanted, but to put that into a bit of context, she'd apparently had 2 hours sleep. That's how much adrenaline she was working off. And as a result, during the finals, had 4 cans of a very well-known caffeinated product. So I'm just so delighted that the truest sense of amateur athletics is coming to the fore, and somebody who's overlooked, somebody who's written off, has delivered to their potential. And so, in conclusion, 2 women, 2 fantastic Brits, Sophie McKinna in the women's shot put and Katarina Johnson-Thompson, and I can't believe I'm saying this, she is the world heptathlon champion. A new British record, almost 7,000 points. My goodness, that was special.
Good to hear that Radzi is very much on the same page. He's a proper honorary backstroke boy now, isn't he? Beo, what was your favourite moment besides Sophie McKinna?
I tweeted this halfway through, or whenever it, where it happened, and I said, by the end of the year, this will still be my top 5 favourite moments of the year, and pretty obscure. Angelica Bengtsson in the
yes!
in the women's pole vault, who had 2 failures at 480 and a broken pole. So she had a pole snap.
Or snap. Off it, yeah, for a second attempt at 480.
Mm. No, no,
it was a third attempt.
It was her third attempt, and it was a national record.
And she got another one,
and she fucking cleared it.
Who does
480? It wasn't like it was 460 or 70. 480, a national record, a personal best.
A national record by like 6 centimeters, yeah. I think.
So it was her highest ever. It was our highest ever on a third attempt after a broken pole. What on earth?
It was
absolutely brilliant.
Kids got guts. Can mine be a sort of themed thing that really briefly incorporates 3 athletes?
Absolutely.
Mine is 400 metre runners, new and old. Ooh. So on the men's side, my favourite heartwarming moment was seeing Kerani James back.
Yay!
Looking good. And Stephen Gardner, the most elegant runner.
He should be an 800 metre runner.
Well, they talked about... Stephen Gardner getting the gold just made it look so effortless. And then, so they're the old guard, the new guard, Jodie Williams, move to the fore. That relay leg was just divine. And also, she looked so pleased with herself after.
Yeah.
So she's another one like Kat, where it's just really good to see her enjoying her athletics again and producing the performances to match that smile.
She didn't look like a fast leg to me, but that's because the Polish girl went sub 50 as well. Her best this year, she's got a 52.60 best this year. I don't know her. I think her best ever is only 51.2. So I just thought they were saying a little bit odd about the timing. But when you go back and you see her time as well, it was obviously really good. Jodie has to, she knows she has to 400.
Yeah. I think she just doesn't want the pay.
No, I get it. And it will help, but it will help with her 200 as well.
But this happens a lot with 400s, because I remember back in the 90s, both Donna and Catherine Merry, not took too long to move to 400s, but by the time they got to 400s, oh, this is my event, you know.
Donna was European junior champion.
She was, but then she messed around with 100s and 200s for a long time in the 90s, didn't she?
Jodie, what is yours?
Well, you've stolen all my favourite ones, so I'm going to go with, and I've just said this a little bit, but the moment that Callum Hawkins caught that...
Just the blind panic on everyone's faces.
Just also to have been so organised, to have run your race in such a mature and such a clever manner. That is the way that people should run marathons. And especially when you know that there's the that kind of the, because of the heat, things are not going to go to plan. I know the Kenyans a few years ago decided at the championships, we're just going to run it like it's a big city marathon and run out hard and run a fast time. And that works for them. But there's always a sneaky bronze to pick up in a marathon, as there is, I think, in a 1500, if you run a smart race. And you look at the 800 and the way that people run, was it Arafi in the women's 800? Didn't work so well in the final, but in the rounds, she was 20 metres behind because she doesn't have that speed. And then you come on. Yuri Borzakowski used to do it as well.
Kelly did it as we reached our goals.
Yeah, I mean, she would have won anyway. But but Steve Cram, that's the way he used to run. Sit at the back for two laps, take the third lap to get into place, and then sprint away. People don't learn great tactics. And so from Callum Hawkins, not only to have been in that kind of form, but to have just, and to be so brave, yes, to let people get away and go, no, it's fine, it's all under control.
We talk about people running their own races, you know, and it's such a mature, grown-up, sort of like professional thing to do, to be able to do that and have that confidence in yourself. I was squealed, that's all I can say.
You what?
I squealed when he...
I hate the word squeal.
Oh! You know, when he actually got to them, and I was like, go past, go past.
Because also, because he'd lost his transponder, we weren't exactly sure where he was. No. And then suddenly, you're like, oh, he's 2 minutes behind. Oh, well, he's 20 seconds behind.
Yeah. Oh, he's right behind them.
Yeah. I just want to give a shout out to someone else who I think got a bit of stick this week, and I don't think it was deserved. Martin Rooney.
Absolutely.
Martin Rooney, in the mixed relay, he ran 44.9 as a last leg, and yeah, he just missed out on a medal. But the teams he was against, like, who knew that Bahrain were going to come out so strong? But the person on their last leg is a low 44 runner. And then in the heats of the 4x4, he was the second fastest person on our team. Yes, it wasn't a fast leg, but he ran 45.8. There was only Rabba ran faster than that. So the idea that he let us down is rubbish. He's not been in great form this year, but he's still the best we've got on a Lenker leg.
Yeah. I also get the sense that having Rooney in your quartet and in your wider camp is just a really positive thing. He's gone to 8 world champs now, hasn't he? This was his 8th. You want him there because of that presence.
Yeah,
and I'd be pretty certain that in the final, when we basically put a lot of teenagers out, I'm pretty certain that was Martin saying, I shouldn't run, you should let me run.
100%.
And look how well that worked.
did they not learn from the Chinese women?
That
you drop that relay, drop that baton, you pick it up, and you finish to get into the
odd. Like, because I personally think it was Rabba's fault.
It was Rabba's fault.
Yeah, because you don't turn
he didn't
around.
Grab it.
Yeah. So, and he also didn't put it, but like he said, he was literally just hanging on for
which
dear life.
Which is why you don't turn around and start running. So,
but then he kind of ran off and just slowed down, and then had a look back, and it was all very lackadaisical, wasn't it? I don't think we've got to the bottom yet of whether just getting to the final qualifies you to the Olympics or whether
I'm not sure either. But if in doubt,
there's been a lot of back and forth about that. But you definitely don't get your prize money. If you don't finish, you don't get your prize money,
which really sucks when you're the fourth leg runner, whose name now escapes me, who is a full-time professional at
Lee Thompson.
So he has a job back in London. He took annual leave to go out to the World Championships to not run in the final.
Little things like that I find so infuriating. Little things like that, you know, when people don't run over the line? Just little things that can make so much difference, make absolutely infuriate me. Can I just say just the last thing about the whole championship, and I think we very briefly touched on it, but it just deserves a bit more, is Mutis Etebashim making the championships, I think, for me and for the crowd and for the country, doing something that no one going in thought he was going to do. Yeah. No one even thought he was going to do during qualification, really, because he didn't look that great. He's barely jumped all year, comes out and does what a proper champion does, and what every champion really wants to do.
No one gets to do it.
Win a gold medal in your home country. Now, he must have, as a kid growing up, been a high jumper, never thought that was going to happen, and this was his one opportunity, and he took it more than anybody else. For the whole week, no one grabbed an opportunity like he did.
We talk in rugby all the time about how it's a sport in which it's so attritional, people get injured all the time, and you never get your perfect farewell. But Richie McCaw did, because he won the World Cup in his last ever international match of rugby. Barsham got that. He got his fairy tale. You don't see it in athletics. So often, careers end in like a whimper, not a bang. And Barsham, no matter what happens now with that injury, but it looks like he's put it behind him.
And he's not that old.
Had his fairy tale. He's had that ridiculous moment of jumping a world lead in front of a home crowd and sending thousands of people into rapture.
And the thing is with him, for me, he's got something that Usain Bolt had. when he takes off, it looks superhuman.
Yes.
He doesn't jump like anyone else. He literally looks like he's got springs. I think he can jump. I think he takes off way too far away.
He takes off way too far away, undoubtedly. It's true.
But so he's got that. It's so light. It doesn't look like a human being.
It doesn't look like, it's not effort, is it?
No.
It's,
and so I think there's so much you could do with him to just promote the sport to people who don't really understand, because seeing him jump looks so spectacular.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a world record, because no one knows what a world record is. It doesn't matter, like Ratsy was saying the other day. Like, have him jumping over things. Have him out there doing stuff, because it looks so amazing. And he speaks perfect English as well, which is, like, something that does really help.
Everyone agrees. He's just a lovely guy with a lovely smile and, like, you know, everything you could want in an athlete.
Every time he ripped his number off, it was electric.
Every time he ripped his number, I was thinking, oh, please don't disqualify him. I genuinely thought that. I thought, like, can you imagine? Because it's the sort of thing they would do.
It has been really fun, I think, watching this champs. I know we talk about how sometimes we tweet so much that we're not enjoying the athletics, but personally, I felt like I struck a good balance this year, and I've actually loved chatting to our listeners during the champs, and people sent in a couple of things that they loved, which we haven't had a chance to mention. Christian Taylor being the ultimate competitor. Again, Jodie Williams, loads of love for Jeanette. Yaroslava Mihutchik with the world junior record of 204 in the high jump final.
Yes, we didn't even say that.
Yeah.
The African fans, the fact that the field events outshone the track. And you know what? The tweet that I think we should probably end with, which I just loved, from George Davidson. He just said, "Didn't it turn out to be great? Despite everything, it was great."
Agreed.
You know, there were ups and downs, and some of the downs were like subterranean. Mm. But Doha was really fun, and I think inherently flawed. But just for the athletics alone, it's been a really good way to end what's been a fantastic season.
We've got, well, next two World Championships, we've got Eugene. Interesting. But then we've got Budapest, which I think is a very... quite strange place to have a championship. So, I mean, they've had the world indoors once, but I've never been to Hungary. Well, I've been to that. But there's never been a major championship in Hungary before. So that's really interesting things coming up in the next 4 years.
Hi, this is Sandy Morris, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
Doha in a sentence or a word or a phrase, something really short, really concise, nail it. Go.
I think what you just said really reminded me of probably my favourite moments, which was all the Africans in the crowd. Like that kind of... that exuberance and that life that we don't see, and especially for distance races. And it's kind of opened my eyes to a different way of presenting and promoting this sport, and something that we should all be looking to kind of bring on board.
Yeah, the future is African.
Hi, this is Jenny Simpson, and back straight's back. All right. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to what was a whistle-stop tour of 10 days of fast.
We
and
could have done
furious.
I've got so many more notes. We could have done twice that.
Oh, no, so have I, but we've got to stop somewhere. We cannot do another two-hour epic. Thank you to everyone who listened to that, by the way. I can't believe so many of you have finished the thing.
In the next few weeks, I think we might be having a bit of a chat with some of the people who come back from Doha. I'm seeing Tom Bosworth on Friday, so we'll have a little chat with him. And there's a couple of people I've been WhatsApping. So when they're back in London, maybe some of our faves we're going to have a little chat with, yeah?
Absolutely.
In the meantime, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. I'm at Claire_G Thomas.
We're at Backstreet B.
Yay!
We also have an Instagram account.
That's Backstreet Boys Podcast.
We do love hearing from you, and we love the reviews that you leave us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your Backstreet fix. We hope you enjoyed the champs as much as we did. Obviously, our eyebrows were sky high at points, but some of the performances were right up there too. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.